1-900-WRESTLING is brought to you, as always, by patreon.com/1900WRESTLING. This is where you can join. And man, I am living proof that the Discord for this channel is the best way. It is the best companion to watching pay-per-views. Really, any kind of live wrestling. It is the best place to be. Knowledgeable, fun people that are going to give you knowledgeable, fun opinions. It's not the gangbang of a Facebook group. It's not the killing fields of Reddit. It is actual wrestling commentary instead of a bunch of people yelling at you. Go ahead and check it out by being a patron at patreon.com/1900wrestling, and you not only get the satisfaction of keeping this show afloat, you also get a little something for yourself. Thank you so much if you have already contributed. If not, go ahead and get in on it. In the meantime, let's stop talking about how we do the show. Oh, what do you say we just do the damn thing?
I want you to call me for all of wrestling's latest news and views. I've been involved in wrestling for 35 years, and nobody knows wrestling like me. Remember the number,
1-900-WRESTLING.
Stupid idiots. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, 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 with all the subtlety of the steel grating cage of Hell in a Cell in Detroit Motor City. It's 1-900-WRESTLING. My name is Justin Robert Young. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Joining me as always from Austin, Texas, if you will, it is Willie Dills Gregory. How you doing, buddy?
Dude, I'm doing fantastic. Watched Hell in a Cell at about 2 a.m. So, and it was a long show. So I definitely had to skip through some stuff to get through, but I think I've got all the highlights in. It was a jam-packed pay-per-view. I also had golf that day.
Oh, my God.
I won a golf tournament here in Austin. So it was a big day yesterday. So I'm glad that we have our new schedule where I got to sleep in a little bit.
I know.
And kind of catch up with all that happened. It was insane. Yesterday was insane.
You had, yeah, no, that is a day chock full of activities. And what you are leaving out is the fact that you streamed through the majority of the evening.
Oh, yeah, then I streamed for about 7 hours, yeah.
Up in those Hearthstone mines, digging out whatever you can. We are obviously going to talk a lot about Hell in a Cell tonight. We are going to talk about the revelations of the main event. We are going to talk about Jinder Mahal and whether or not, as Brian Alvarez put it last night, Shane McMahon will continue to either kill himself or put himself in to long-term misery as he gets older. Also, a big new addition to Twitch. Free wrestling on Twitch just added a major free agent. We will get to all that, as well as our philosophical question and our Melodica challenge. But where do we begin but where Hell in a Cell began? To me, Willie, that pay-per-view was worth it for two matches. Not to say that the others weren't good, but these two were going to be hard to beat no matter what, considering the gimmickry involved.
There were some standout matches for sure.
Let's begin with the first, because I think it's going to get crazy to say, but it's going to get overwhelmed by all the spectacle of the main event. But the New Day and the Usos are just, they're something special. And I think both those teams really kind of took a step forward to the point where now, you know, I see on some of the online chatter, the Usos being kind of listed among some of the smarkily revered tag teams in New Japan and Ring of Honor as like the best technical team in the world wrestling right now. And, you know, New Day, for all their silliness, they got brutal last night. There were some of the visuals in that match that were like, I want to see on a t-shirt. I forget if it was Jimmy or Jay, but him locked up in the cell with the kendo stick and his missing tooth, just like that was out of a Saw movie. It was amazing.
Sure. Yeah, they had, it was kind of impressive to me, the amount of spots they came up with that felt really unique and like you'd never seen them before. I mean, creating a jail cell out of kendo sticks, I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah.
Creating like or like hanging Xavier Woods with the handcuffs like another sexy pinata.
I know the
sexy smart pinata that plays the trombone. There was a lot of stuff going on that was just insane. And then of course the brutality of the whole thing. I actually, so this was the first match, you know, obviously of the night. And again, they stole the show. But I remember I was watching it and I was getting like emotional, like how good this match was. I was sold on everything. I marked out throughout the entire thing. It was insane.
I could not agree more. And certainly that, you know, a Passion of the Woods spot where he was just getting beaten while he was, I mean, thank God the Usos are Samoan, or else we would have had a real problematic issue.
Sure, you can't do that with white guys. But so yeah. Let's
save that spot for the Usos and not the Revival is all I'm saying.
Exactly. So there was like so many things that emotionally, you know, like they solidified the Usos as this brutal heel team, in such a great way. And then also made the New Day's like the ultimate babyface after this, where, you know, Woods is saving the match while handcuffed still. And like the facial expression as he just like looks exhausted, the timing and everything was perfect. There's many things actually at last night throughout the entire pay-per-view that were executed flawlessly. And this is one of the things where, you know, we watch a lot of indie wrestling and stuff too.
Yeah.
And that, yes, they could do a lot more in indie wrestling matches because they're not really being told to tone anything down. There's nobody really telling them, hey, don't do this, don't do that. But WWE does so many like, there's a reason these guys are in the top promotion in the world.
It's well, they just do things
the right way.
I aside from maybe color,
yeah,
I don't know if there's much that they were stopped from doing last night. Right.
But they like, you know, they kind of just say, like, keep your move set to these things that
we
know people like and stuff like that. So there's not a lot of like weird random stuff that's kind of happening that you've never seen this guy do.
Yeah.
Before.
I mean, I guess
and
like
yeah,
band,
definitely big spot still.
Band moves and stuff like that, like a pile driver here and again. Like, you know, that's a different story.
Yeah. You're not going to see a lot of Canadian destroyers.
No Canadian destroyers. No. But even then, like, just there's a lot of brutality if you want to find it on the indies.
Oh, Jesus, yeah,
right?
I mean,
like, but that every spot felt brutal.
Yeah.
Right.
But like perfectly timed too, which is just so hard to coordinate in a chaotic match like that, right?
Yeah.
You got four guys in a cell. You got, you know, and of course you could have essentially the fifth guy, but he's locked outside the cell. So he kind of, you know, simplifies things just a little bit. But still, there was just so much movement. So it was everywhere, you know? There was, I could count, like, maybe five or six spots that just, like, made me stand up. I'm, like, trying to, like, kind of get ready to go to bed after the pay-per-view's over.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't lay down and watch this. I have to, like, sit up and pay attention. This is so insane. Big E, like, running the Uso around the ring, like, and hitting, you know, multiple different parts of the cage. And they were, like, the announcer said, like, I think the cage moved a foot. It looked like it did. Like,
yeah,
he dislodged the entire thing. It was insane. They found so many ways to use that structure that I've never seen before. So good on that. It wasn't just, hey, you know, look, there's a lot to be said for climbing up and jumping off. But they found lots and lots of different ways to make that structure matter.
Ultimately, it is the Usos going home with the titles that ends their feud.
Does it really, though? Do you think it's just over now? I mean, this is a great match to go out on.
They got to. I mean, we're done. Like, they're.
I don't know where they go from here if they continued, for sure.
Bring it back at WrestleMania or team them up at Survivor Series or something like that. Like, there's that we have to be done with this phase of things.
Yeah, it's been going on for a long time. The thing is that, to be honest, I wouldn't mind like five or six more matches of these guys because they are so freaking good. But it's gonna get to a point where it's kind of gone on for too long, right? So
let me
remember this one.
Let me posit this here for you. This is my fantasy booking. I was almost more excited to see the New Day lose because this is my entire dream is I want to see faction New Day and not tag team New Day.
Okay.
And I would love it if we started to hear that New Day music multiple times a show. Imagine a world where Big E's in the heavyweight in the world title picture. Xavier Woods is in that mid-card, that U.S. title picture. Kofi Kingston in a newly rebooted 205 Live that is understood. Hey, if we mix in some of this star power from our other shows, imagine Kofi Kingston and the New Day playing a part on 205 Live going forward.
Sure. I mean, yeah, you got Kalisto in there now, too, with Enzo, so makes sense to me. Also, the fact is, if this Shield thing happens, and I know they're not on the same show, but the Shield thing is like happening and it's happening soon. I would like to see them, you know, run through. I'd like to see all the factions. I would love to see New Day versus the Shield at some point. That would be super fun.
Oh my God. So, well, yeah.
There's many things you can do with faction New Day, not tag team New Day. Absolutely.
Sure. And I think it's just mixing them up and letting them, they can all come out and cut one promo and then wrestle throughout the night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like there's no reason why. In fact, it's the exact opposite. The most fruitful time in the company's history was when groups came out, cut big long promos at the beginning of the show, and then wrestled throughout the night, be they the Corporation, D-Generation X, the NWO, all those. They would always begin with you know, somebody coming out and wrestling or talking crap like that. All right, and as for the Usos, I mean, who would you like to see them wrestle going forward? Who should be the number one contender?
That's tough because you look at like the match they had at the beginning of the night, and Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable are probably what's going to happen now to them. I think there's not a lot of it's a pretty thin roster.
Well, I mean, except for the fact that the most over tag team otherwise is Breezango, but they're doing viral videos.
They're not wrestling
now
anymore. It's at this point now, the Fashion Files is literally just like how the joke now is how long can we keep it going, right? Like the joke is not even the actual jokes. It's just that, oh no, you thought we're done and we're going to reveal something? No. We're going again. We're like rebooting the whole damn franchise.
And also apparently now we're rebooting the Ascension too. The Ascension is just part of it.
It, you know, I'm finding it pretty hilarious that they're, you know, because now it's the 2B is the big meme that they're pushing. So,
yeah,
you know, 2B, what could that be? Oh, 2B continued. Got it. Okay. So, yeah, it's pretty good. I don't know. I guess it's Gable like and Benjamin. They feed them for a little while and then maybe something happens with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens.
Well, you know, there is a new tag team possibly that we could talk about, but let's save that for the end.
Sure.
Well, no, let's save it for right now. Well, before we go,
any other best match of the night, right? So let's, you know.
Yeah, well, was there anything else? Because we're going to spend the rest of the majority of this show talking about this final match.
I mean, I guess, well, okay, we should bring up the gender match, right?
Let's talk because about gender.
It's definitely an interesting, it's an interesting phenomenon what's going on right now with gender. Because, you know, Shinsuke is, I think a lot of people assumed, was going to come into the WWE, have his NXT run, and then move up to the main roster and be a world champion pretty soon, right? They were going to make that happen pretty quickly. And then, but he kind of like came in at this weird time where I feel like they're just having fun with us at this point. They're like, I know you all want gender to lose, but we're not going to let that happen so easily. And now it's kind of just every show, everyone's just kind of like, okay, is it going to be this time? Is it going to be this time? Like, oh my God, they can't keep doing it, right?
Yeah.
But I'm actually entertained by it. I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority here, but well, I'm still finding it entertaining.
I mean, I will emphatically say I do not believe that Shinsuke Nakamura is being treated poorly. You know, he's in the main. He's in the championship match. He's fighting competitively. The other person has to cheat, you know, to win. Even if even if there was a quote unquote kind of clean pin for Mahal last night, Mahal was still beat if it weren't for Singh Brother.
I mean, it was clean in the fact that he got, you know, he actually, you know, did the final couple moves, but there was still a lot of distraction elements going on, right?
Well, no, he was dead until the Singh brothers ran back down and distracted Charles Robinson again. So, you know, I was listening to the Pro Wrestling Sheet guys last night. They did a little live stream to go over the main event and or the whole pay-per-view. And they were mentioning that right now there's just a weird moment in time where you have the next pay-per-view for SmackDown is Survivor Series, which is a joint pay-per-view. So you don't have a lot of real estate, and a bunch of people are going to be taken up in the main match, right? So, and then past that, you're basically setting up for Mania, right? Like, after that, it's Mania season, basically. That leads us through the holidays and into the beginning of spring. So you would assume, I guess that's the thing, is that a lot of people were kind of guessing, well, then now's the time that you flip the title and then you begin to build to Nakamura AJ at Mania, which is widely rumored to be the SmackDown main event. But at the same time, you know, who's to say that Nakamura is the one that has the title
at that point?
That point, right? And
I mean,
maybe
essentially now that both men have no titles, and that's not really a match that needs a belt on the line to.
No, that one. I think right? If you're going to do the SmackDown main event at WrestleMania, which would effectively be the match to keep the Smarks happy while Roman Reigns gets coronated for a 10th time
for the millionth time,
then yeah, I think that should be, and you make, you know, it be, I mean, if the idea is to have Nakamura win the title at WrestleMania, then this is appropriate pain to be played in the montage before that match, right?
It obviously lines up well because AJ is now kind of, you know, I think he'll be moving on from the U.S. title. He'll probably be coming after the big title. If he can't beat Jinder and the Singh brothers, then I don't know who can. Also, you know, this could be an interesting thing where, like, they could even have him lose a couple of times or just the one time probably, but with the involvement, but then somehow find a way to overcome the odds somewhere down the line. And then and then that does line up pretty well. So I think you're right. There's probably something going on there. It's all part of the long term plan, but.
I
find it hilarious because it's basically just I just read the salt the next day.
Yeah.
Every time Jinder retains.
Jinder. You know? Well,
and it is true. I will say this though. The what's his finishing move called? The Coloss.
The Coloss. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is weird that no one kicks out of that, and yet in the opening match we had like Big E kicking out of like a double frog splash from the Usos and stuff like that. Those guys can kick out of a finisher, but Nakamura cannot, apparently.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what. You try to deal with that much HGH, and you tell me how
look,
easy it is to kick out.
Look, he lifts you at least 3 feet in the air before slamming you into a basic back bump. So, yeah. Who kicks out of that, right?
Well, let's...
Super AAs, that's fine. We can kick out of those, but...
Here's the one big thing that I will say is that I think a little bit of the frustration comes from the failure for Jinder to kind of play at a very, very high level right now with the talent around him, because
it's kind of exposing him more than it's helping him. Like he's not elevating to their level necessarily. In some ways, it feels like people are being brought down to his level, right? So you're getting really slow paced matches.
And I think that like in ring, he's gotten a lot better.
Sure.
And he's helped a lot by some of the, you know, pyro and ballyhoo with the Singh brothers and the big entrance, and you know he'll get the big gigantic dancing troupe and everything every once in a while, but I do think that there was something really the win was kind of taken out of the sails a little bit with some of the race stuff in the Nakamura build, and not necessarily because it was racist, because there has been plenty of racist stuff during the WWE's and professional wrestling's run in general. The bigger problem is that I don't think they know where they're going with the race stuff.
Sure.
And whenever you're introducing that live grenade and you don't know where you're going to throw it, I think it can very often blow up in your face. And that's what happened with the gender build this time, which kind of just made what should just be a straight ahead, you keep cheating, I'm going to beat you chase a little bit more complicated than it had to be.
I would kind of prefer that they go kind of the Seth Rollins route with the J&J security, where they just have him act like he's just doing this all on his own. You know, I did it, me and only me, and just instead of like coming out and doing the like the weird stuff with Nakamura and the pictures didn't really work, didn't land. It just wasn't very funny, you know, and I know Jinder can be funny, but that just, there was nothing really good about it, right? So, like, this build didn't really matter. And, yeah, like, the whole thing with, you know, you don't like me because I look different than you isn't really working either. So it's like, just have him be, yeah, like, a heel champion who always wins by cheating and just acts like that's not what's happening. Like, Kevin Owens is great at that. And Seth Rollins was great at it. I think Jinder could be great at that, too. He's got, like, the facial stuff down really well. His promos, like, the way he talks is very powerful. And then, of course, the commentary is like protecting him by saying, you know, this is his style. He slows you down. He wears you down. He does this. And that's fine, too. And that can work. Then the match can just be more about kind of waiting for him to be the opportunist and find a way to win, rather than being like, man, I wish it was someone else in there instead of him against Nakamura, because then they'd have a really good match. Right. Like, I don't know. They're making it too much. It's that's getting exposed more than it could be. They could protect all of it, I think.
Yeah. You know, there was a moment, remember, before he was Juice Robinson in NJPW, CJ Parker was his name in NXT.
Sure. Yeah.
And he was the environmental.
He was environmentalist hippie. Yeah.
Hippie. Right. And there was, I loved that. He was one of the characters that really got me into NXT, to be totally honest with you. But I always felt that they never turned that other corner with him, where you gotta have the backstage footage of him riding around in a Hummer, right?
sure. Yeah.
You know, you have to make him hypocritical. That there are these great stories, specifically in 2017, when you can tell a villainous character who is exploiting racial animus, who is exploiting environmental stuff, virtue signaling, if you will, right?
Yeah.
If you will. But you have to show that it is not genuine. And I think that's the problem, is that if Jinder Mahal is really just saying, people are racist, you're kind of like, yeah, they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, okay, sure. They're probably, I'm sure Jinder Mahal's heard some nasty stuff at a random house show all over the country. Mm-hmm. So am I supposed to feel good about him or bad about him? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's just the angle doesn't really make it, yeah, it doesn't make him as heelish as he needs to. I don't know. Yeah, you're right.
There just needs to be that extra hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is what everybody hates. And I think that 2017 is a right time where you can highlight racial hypocrisy. We have enough stuff here in our lexicon in which you can say, hey, look at somebody exploiting pain in others for their own gain callously. But I don't think that we're quite there with gender. Here's somewhere that we are.
You know what he could do? He could like hate people who don't speak Punjabi, who are also Indian or something like that.
Sure.
Like you could have him be, you know, like an elitist Punjabi. And then, you know, like anybody who speaks, I don't know, what do they speak? What is that?
Punjab.
Hindi?
Punjab.
Sindhi,
they speak Punjab.
Yeah, there's like a few other ones.
Yeah.
He could just like hate them, right? That could totally make that thing kind of pop in a different way. So I think you're right. I think, yeah, hypocritical heels are that you just hate them.
Or just arrogant.
Nothing's more hateable than a hypocrite, right?
Yeah, or just arrogant, you know?
Just good old-fashioned arrogance, yep.
Just he hates everybody because they're not as good as him. I'll tell you, here's what something that was very, 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 very good. That was our main event. Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens. Let's start with the first thing that I can think of. Kevin Owens has lost weight, huh?
But he's looking, yeah, he's looking really good. But he, you know, I kind of like the fat Kevin Owens who still somehow can do all the crazy stuff, right?
Well, he never
he'd be like a standing moonsault and things like that.
He always has that wrestler's body, right? Like,
yeah.
And by that I mean your average wrestler that you see at independent wrestling, right?
Sure, yeah, yeah. He looks like an indie wrestler who just somehow is happens to be really good. Like, his arms don't look incredibly muscular, you know, just
yeah.
nothing about him. But he's just kind of a big, mean-looking dude. So,
well, and also,
yeah,
it's like,
man, I guess maybe the WWE is rubbing off on him. He's actually hitting the gym or something.
He's got a belly, but that's the weird thing about actual professional wrestlers. Like, if you were to punch Kevin Owens' stomach, you'd break your hand. There's just like pro wrestlers' bodies are just like callous. They're like rhino hides.
Yeah. Everything is hard. Well, fall on your back, you know, 30 times a day, every day on a hard wood and see how your body like reacts to that.
I don't think anybody was really surprised that this was the main event. It certainly delivered like a main event.
It had the best build of any main event that we've had for a while. I mean, obviously you could talk about Braun Strowman and just everyone's just excited for him all the time just because of the crazy stuff he's pulling. But just as far as like two guys hating each other, you telling a guy he should have died and that would have been better off, like, for his family.
Yeah.
It just doesn't get worse than that. I mean, you really felt like Shane McMahon hated him. Also, too, if you really look back, you can look back to before they were technically feuding. And Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens, that story was building for a long time. Like,
well,
they weren't even technically feuding, but they were constantly, like, kind of in each other's way, right? And that whole thing made it feel very organic, right? Like, it wasn't suddenly forced because they had to make a match for a pay-per-view.
No, right? No, this was probably the most subtly built main event that we have had in a very long time, specifically when you factor in the surprise at the end. What were the big moments for you in this match?
So I think number one is obviously the ending, but the other ones that were, like, I thought were just crazy was the pop-up powerbomb on the top, where I thought for sure they were going to do a Mankind style spot, but thankfully the engineering is a little better on the Hell in a Cell now and it didn't actually break
this,
but that was scary as hell.
This was so well told, so smart, playing to all of our expectations. Like, every Hell in a Cell they're gonna show the big highlights from the Mankind Undertaker Hell in a Cell, and
yeah,
the big things that you always remember are Mankind getting thrown off the top, Mankind getting choke slammed through the cage.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, so they basically teased the violence in such a way where you were kind of on the edge of your seat the entire time, saying like, oh no, they're not going to do this. No, don't do that, you know, and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And I, you know, reading the comments afterwards, a lot of people were saying that they felt sick to their stomach, like, watching it, because they knew something bad was going to happen.
It was legit terrifying. And
yeah,
like, when KO was teasing jumping off the top, like,
oh,
face
God
first,
yeah,
it was like, oh my God. Like, that was something where I bought it after. And then as soon as he starts doing the heel, you know, yelling at the crowd stuff, I'm like, oh, thank Christ that that's not.
Yeah, he's not actually going to jump.
That's
yeah
not an actual thing.
But,
that's
you
going
know,
to
his
happen.
His bump off of the halfway up point or whatever.
Yeah.
While they're both, you know, hanging on fighting. That was, again, like when I talked about what WWE wrestlers do kind of better than everybody else, like, they just pull these spots off so well. He didn't look back and check to make sure he was falling in the right spot.
No.
You know, he, and also the second before, he actually lets go of the cage for a second and then, like, re-catches himself back on, you know, looking like he's barely holding on. He's just going to take one more, you know, headbutt into the cage to knock him down. And when he actually goes down, it's just, it looked like a natural, like, I'm just falling off, you know. Obviously, you see, if you pay attention, you watch it again, you see him, like, twist himself so he's sideways and lands directly onto his back and stuff. So he's, but he's, goddamn, what a pro, you know, to make it look just like, I just hit my head, I'm dazed, I fell off the cage, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's literally what it looked like in the moment, anyway. I watched that spot like 5 or 6 times now, and it's just more impressive when you kind of know what's happening, because, like, the talent it takes to carefully fall onto a table from, you know, 12 feet in the air is something you don't really get to practice, to be honest.
No.
So, now, you don't get to practice that actual thing. I'm sure they, like, maybe fell into some foam pits or something like that to figure some stuff out, but
just insane. insane and, yeah. and exceptional. The rest of the match inside was also really good. The cannonball into the tables were amazing.
We got a coast to coast. We got all sorts of good stuff.
Everybody got their shit in. but you're right. That suspense on top of the cage where it was really them playing against history. Us just remembering mankind going through that cage and thinking, oh my God, this cage is twice as large as that one. Like somebody falling through that where you don't know exactly how you're going to hit the mat. Like that's death. Like that's not even something that you can plan for.
Yeah. And you see guys, you know, jump all the time off of the top rope and just land, you know, face first, you know, to what appears to us face first onto the mat where a guy moves out of the way. And you're just like, holy crap. Now imagine doing it, you know, from 20 feet in the air. We've seen Kurt Angle, by the way, his moonsault off the top of the cage in TNA.
Yeah.
That's probably still like the craziest thing I've ever seen a single guy do.
Yeah.
And just go straight like outside of the Mankind thing where obviously like that wasn't technically planned. So but, you know, planned stuff like that. So I was like, OK, maybe they think that they could do this. Maybe Kevin Owens is just crazy enough to think that he could like take that bump or something, or Shane, you know, still just willing to do anything at all. But it ended up kind of culminating in an even better moment because we had all this like suspense going up to it. Yeah. And then when we finally get the moment he leaps off, it's equally, even though, yeah, it's probably a way safer version of what Mankind did. It's still like kind of had that. It was finally just like you know, like that moment where you like hand over the mouth. You gasping, you can't believe what just happened, and then an even bigger reveal inside of all of that, right?
It is so much higher than Mankind was.
Yes.
It was, I mean, they made it that high so people would stop doing it until Shane came back. And then Shane's like, well, I get to do it though, right? And they're like, well, you're not gonna sue. So, sure, whatever. Do what you want. Big shout out to Shane. I mean, I know that there is a line of thought of like, oh, the McMahons making themselves the stars of the show. Shane, I don't remember his matches when he was a kid being this good.
No, he doesn't have to keep doing this. He's 47. He could just chill out. But there's something in him that just wants to...
That's the best match of his career, right?
Oh, it's got to be. Yeah. There's something inside him that just wants to keep wowing everybody. And, you know, and the thing that's crazy about it, too, is that this was part of the buildup to the match, right?
Yeah.
Because Kevin Owens telling him, like, because your daddy didn't pay enough attention to you, you got to jump. You gotta, look, Dad, I could jump off of buildings and survive.
Yeah.
And then here we go. You know, it's like the whole thing, everything about this. When you talk about wrestling being the greatest art form, like, this is what you're talking about. You know, it's when you watch this. I don't think you could take anybody, even someone who thinks wrestling is stupid, and have them watch this and then not come away going, oh, my God, that you will convince anybody. If you're trying to convince somebody to become a wrestling fan, show them this match and like the package before it, and they will be a wrestling fan afterwards.
There was a moment a couple Tuesdays ago when I was watching SmackDown before I had to do Night Attack. And I remember a backstage little vignette that they were doing that kind of kept looping Sami Zayn back into this Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon feud. And I remember saying in our Discord, for which you can become a member if you pledge at any level at patreon.com/1900wrestling, I wonder how they're going to pay off Sami Zayn's involvement in this feud. You kind of thought it was because they fought each other in the main event of SmackDown. And then, oh, when he needed somebody the most, real friends, how many of us have real friends? Sami Zayn rescues Kevin Owens, plops his former friend, former enemy on top of Shane McMahon, for the 1, 2, this is why we needed it to be False Count Anywhere, 3. And by the way, let's just say, this is how the Undertaker match should have ended. at WrestleMania 32. No need to get back into the goddamn
sure, yeah, after that
back into the ring.
Go back in there and have
somebody just pin somebody on the outside.
An attack spot. Yeah, that was all unnecessary after that. No, this was insane because the way the camera work was done, it just looked like Kevin Owens got out of the way.
Yeah.
Right? It looked like just a normal like the Undertaker rolled away during the Hell in the Cell match with Shane last year, and it looked like Kevin Owens just rolled out of the way. By the way, if you watch really closely, like the slow-mo, it was almost a disaster. Kevin Owens literally is like a moment away from him landing on his neck.
No,
right? Because he actually gets up, like on his, you know, sits up and then is pulled forward.
I've got
Shane is coming down.
I've got my own loose change conspiracy theory. I think that Kevin thought Sammy waited too long because he got up early before Sammy started pulling his arm.
Yeah.
And then Sammy pulled his arm and that was it. But I think that's a hard timing
to get right. And you don't have a lot of chances to practice it. Like I said before, you basically have one shot at pulling that.
And
off,
by the way, if you've seen any of their stuff in Ring of Honor, they want to get the most out of everything. They will risk everything for the moment. And holy shit, did they?
Yeah. So, you know, the camera work made it so that you didn't see Sammy there at all. And then they start showing the replay and you're like, wait, what? Sami Zayn? And then, you know, obviously, we've been watching wrestling for a while, and so you think they've had some conversations that didn't end with both of them brawling, right? So definitely there's been some constructive stuff going on in their relationship. They don't just immediately go to blows when they see each other anymore.
Yeah.
But you still didn't expect that Sami was going to come out and actually help Kevin here. And so now it's like you start to, like, the mind starts to spin and you start trying to figure out what is the motivation here. And this is somebody, you know, at the top of the Hell in a Cell post discussion was just, this is how you get me to watch SmackDown Live on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely right, because now everyone just wants to hear why and what the hell happened and what's the motivation here.
Can I just...
I have some theories, but I think I want to hear it out of his own mouth.
Here's the one thing that, and by and large, I thought commentary has done a great job and has continued to do a great job. Corey Graves has filled in very well for JBL. The one thing that I miss the most about Jim Ross in these moments is when he would kind of break down from announcer to guy who just works with other guys, like where he would just be like all the like no. No, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't. God damn it. Don't do it.
Yeah, he suddenly just becomes a wrestling fan begging them not to die.
Or just a guy that works with them. That, like, you know, like they all wrestle together and then, you know, they go to the Shoney's, you know, afterward, or they hang out at the Marriott bar. There's just like one of those. I just really wanted Corey Corey probably the best one to do it, to just be like, what are you doing? Just do that one little, I feel like that's the one gear that Corey needs to do is that one shift from, hey, I'm a guy who's a commentator and I'm playing it up. Cause even in kayfabe, they're playing it up, right? That's their job.
No, yeah, I think you're right. It's really hard to actually pull it off as naturally as good old JR for sure. But I do think, like, right now the three-person teams that we're seeing on both shows are doing fantastic jobs. I mean, I'm not mad at commentary as nearly as often as I once was. So, you know,
Corey Graves, Tom Phillips, and a black guy?
Yes. what a trio.
Yeah. They're great. Is Sammy
a heel? What is your theory on why Sammy did this? Because, you know, a lot of people are saying this is setting up them to become – essentially, like, is this a heel turn? Is this like a true heel turn?
Yes.
Or is there something else going on here?
Now, I've been wrong before because, you know, it's not like he did anything screwed up like commit a vehicular murder.
Sure.
And
that's
that
something faces do.
That right? Apparently wasn't something that would connote a heel turn. No, I think that this is a heel turn. And what we're going to get is Sami Zayn's Owen Hart. you know, Sami Zayn.
This is a reluctant heel turn, though, right? This is him. He's gonna be struggling with this.
No, I think this is him being villainous. And you can just even hear it in his voice, like you know, I was in this company for 3 years. I was in this NXT for 2 years. I was the champion. Next thing you know, I have my best friend come in, stab me in the back. He goes on to fame and glory. I'm going to do things the right way. I'm going to come into the WWE, do things the right way. And what do I get? Nothing. And what do I see? The person that stabbed me in the back becomes the champion, gets the main event, is in WrestleMania. What do I get? Nothing. So I decided it was about time. Maybe he was right. I think that's what we're going to get.
All right. I'm on board. I mean, it is true. And it's a very believable. Like, this is one of the greatest things about how they're kind of doing the product these days is it's all very based around, like, you know, you've talked about the audience feedback. The wrestlers literally react to that in real time.
Yeah.
I'm starting to feel like the company is reacting to the IWC in real time, right? They're reading the comments and they're having their characters kind of reflect that reality, right? That the smarks are seeing, oh, you know, Sammy, like, why isn't Sammy getting the love? Like, we love Sammy, we still like him, blah, blah, blah. And how do we then kind of react to that, right? It feels very real.
Well, I also think that Sami Zayn kind of falls into a bit of a curse as being a guy that everybody knows can work and can have a good match with anybody, but is not a natural, like, you don't look at him and say world champion, right? Like,
sure.
He would need
to. I mean, you could. Okay, how does this work, though? How do you come out? And this is just based on Reverend Puck's recent message. How do you come out to his current theme song as a heel?
That's going to be hard. I was listening to that because we played that as we came online here on Twitch. That was my first thought. It's like, I think we're going to need new.
He's going to have to do something.
We're going to need new theme music.
Yeah, it's too happy. It's just too dancey. It's a face song. So, yeah, we'll see.
But also, here's something that the WWE has sat on their back pocket. NXT sat on their back pocket. Those guys were one of the best tag teams. I mean, they got famous because they were a great tag team.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's where they really, it was them as a big indie tag team and then splitting and turning into big indie single stars that really made them. They have not wrestled like that in a very long time. And I'm going to be very, 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 very excited to see what that looks like now that they are at this stage in their career.
I've even seen some people suggesting that he puts the mask back on.
No, that'll be for after he loses a loser leave town.
I think
match.
It's taking a little too far. I definitely don't think we're going to see that happen. But
all right, let's circle back real quick to Shane. There has been some of the commentary both last night and today. That, you know, this is not something that a 47-year-old man should be doing. This takes away from the product. He already did it once. Why do we need to see this done again? Where are you at on Shane McMahon, the stuntman?
Well, there's definitely a lot of efforts to make it as safe as possible, right? So you see that the table, if you watch it again, is filled with like air, puffy air, so it kind of cushions his fall as much as possible. That being said, there's also a report that he went to the hospital afterwards and had lots of injuries right after that match. So you're definitely, as a 47-year-old, your body's never meant to leap off of 20-foot stories.
I am a 34-year-old man with back problems. I cannot imagine a 47-year-old man in his kind of shape doing that. That's insane. Yeah.
It's crazy. And we've also heard a lot that, you know, he's had a history of concussions doing a bunch of these spots and things like that. The thing is that he doesn't wrestle all the time. So if there's any like thing that makes it kind of okay is the fact that it only pulls it out a couple times a year, really. And that's probably doable for him if he's training around it and he's recovering. You know, he's got, I'm sure, the best medical care afterwards that you can get. And so I think, you know, it's probably okay. But it can't go on much longer. That's kind of where I'm at.
Here's all I'll say. His father is a billionaire and his mother works in the White House. He does not need to be doing this.
Nope.
The McMahons are bizarre carnival people. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, it's it sounds like a lot of the wrestlers were hurt after this pay-per-view, just to be fair. So it's not like necessarily, you know, what he's doing isn't like it's so much crazier what everybody else is doing. I mean, obviously it is to a certain extent, but I think he knows what he can and can't do at this point, right? He's been doing it for such a long time. I don't think we're going to see him like suddenly go 40 feet in the air and things like that again. I think, you know, he's kind of like, this is the max I can do. I'm going to do this. And maybe he'll surprise me. I don't know. But I understand the concern. I just think this guy's obviously making this choice on his own. And they're doing everything they can to make it as safe as possible.
I will say those two matches last night were two of the best Hell in a Cell matches that I've ever seen. I think it will be hard to top them. That's it. It was really good. I mean, what are you gonna say? It was awesome.
I'm looking forward to see what the ratings are for all these matches. I'm expecting that we're gonna get some pretty high stuff going on.
Yeah, you know, Meltzer already poo-pooed the idea that the New Day Usos match will be a 5.
I don't expect him to give anything a 5.
Yeah,
here.
He said, if I give that a 5, I'll have to give 250 other matches this year a 5.
Hmm. Okay. I don't know if there's 250 matches this year that equal that one, but all right. He, you know, he really likes his fake finishers and his back and forth to finish the match. So, there's no Tokyo Dome, exactly.
All right. Let's get out of the cell and go out to the rest of the wider world of wrestling. Obviously, we stream here on Twitch, twitch.tv/JustinRYoung. We've talked quite a bit about some of the other promotions that stream here for free on Twitch, including Wrestle Circus, Hood Slam, and more. A new name added to that, apparently from the horse's mouth. This is from New York City Comic Con this weekend. One of the ECW originals, Tommy Dreamer, announcing that he has signed a multi-year deal with Twitch to bring his House of Hardcore promotion to the platform. Are you familiar with Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore promotion?
I've not actually watched it, but I do know of it. And I know that like one of the jokes about it is it's like his excuse to be in the main event. Because I think he's in every single main event that they do, right? But they do a lot of shows a year, right? They do multiple shows every year.
Yeah,
as far as I know.
I don't know offhand, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was
right now,
you know, anywhere between eight to 12 shows a year. The one big thing about it is that, I mean, he's been around so long and has so many connections that you do wind up getting a lot of bigger names. This is going
so
to
I'm
be the place.
Looking at it right now, and you've got Sammy Callahan was in the last main event versus Jeff Cobb. And MVP Jake Hager and Tommy Dreamer. MVP Tommy Dreamer, the squad. MVP Jake Hager, Tommy Dreamer. The Young Bucks, yeah. Billy Gunn and Tommy Dreamer. Okay. Cody Rhodes has done it. Penta.
Yep.
Phoenix. Broken Matt Hardy. Rhino, Ethan Carter, EC3. You know, so yeah, absolutely. Some big names for sure.
I think it's going to be great. There's a ton of big names that I think an average audience from Twitch will be very excited to see. So.
Oh, look at this. House of Hardcore 14, May 7, 2016. Bobby Roode versus Eric Young.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah. Kind of want to watch that match.
Well, hopefully they'll upload a bunch of their old shit, too. That'd be just great to have.
Yeah, absolutely. This is just fantastic news as far as I'm concerned. To continue to just more and more promotions, I think jumping on this bandwagon is just going to get everyone else to start doing the same thing. And we can move away from... You know, the indie shows having their own pay-per-view type service thing. It's just hiding eyes from them, right? And let's just open it up. Let's get everyone to see these people because there's so much good talent out there.
Yeah, and God knows where programs or stuff like Flow Slam is going to be when they're suing, their partners for $1 million. That's not necessarily indicative of a healthy business. How about this one? War Games coming to NXT. Their Houston takeover will now be TakeOver War Games. The ultimate way that WCW could figure out who would fight the Horsemen now comes to NXT. Now, you were you much of a WCW guy? Do you have fond War Games memories?
You know, at the time, the whole Monday Nitro and Raw battle was definitely one of the periods of my life where I was super into wrestling. So I did watch quite a bit of WCW as well at that time. But I definitely always favored WWE or WWF at the time. I watched a lot of Goldberg matches because who didn't? And I'd flip back and forth and stuff like that. I always, when the whole NWO thing was going on, obviously, like, everybody was kind of paying attention to that. But, you know, War Games isn't like some super fond memory I have necessarily. But it was one of the things that was super weird that was being tried. And I think I've heard that they're going to be doing the multiple ring thing potentially.
They will. Two rings. Not three, but two rings will be put together in the Houston area. Let's go ahead.
By the way,
Houston
is 2 hours from me, and tickets are not on sale yet, but I'm going to look into this. This is intriguing me. It's so close. Two hours.
That's the Survivor Series weekend.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not far to go, so I'm kind of feeling it.
Maybe we'll have to have a little conversation here.
Yeah, we should have a conversation. You like Texas. You have reasons to come here. Money-making style reasons sometimes.
Like a little trips to Texas. All right, so this is normally the War Games match would happen during Fall Brawl during the 90s. But here are some of the matches. Of course, it would be the Hulkamaniacs. Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Lex Luger, and Sting defeating the Dungeon of Doom, Kamala, Zodiac, The Shark, and Ming. By the time that the NWO came around in 96, Hogan, Hall, Nash, and NWO Sting defeating Lex Luger, Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, and Sting. The NWO, wow, so it was a lot of NWO. The NWO being Buff Bagwell, Kevin Nash, Six, and Conan defeating the Four Horsemen. I think this is the 97 version. This is the one after the NWO made fun of Ric Flair. Did you ever see that promo?
Don't think so.
Ric Flair. Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson had to retire.
That makes more sense.
Arn Anderson had to retire, and so they came out with, like, Arn Anderson, Kevin Nash played Arn Anderson as this, like, bumbling old drunk and shit like that. It was awesome. Really, really great.
I'm wondering, like, so do we know what the NXT matches are going to be for this?
Yeah, this will be a three-way match where it's Sanity versus...
Yeah, tag team stuff, right?
Yeah, so yeah. Eric Young... Wolf and whatever his butt is, but they're the champions.
Big Damo.
Big Damo, yeah. Versus the Authors of Pain and Roderick Strong versus the Undisputed Era, Fish, O'Reilly, and Adam Cole.
Adam Cole, baby.
Bebe. All
right. That sounds fantastic. So I'm looking at War Games history, and wow, this really went all the way back to like NWA times.
Yeah.
And then Dusty Rhodes, right?
A Dusty Rhodes creation.
Yeah, it actually says here he watched Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. It was like, okay, we should do this.
This was and initially just a way to kind of do a big faction blow off kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah, dude, this sounds fantastic. Just the spectacle of it, I would love to be there in person for this because I think this is one of those things that probably comes across in real life a lot better than it ever could on on TV, right? To see the two rings, to see the I'm curious to see how the whole setup's going to be. Are they going to do a big cage around it? Are they going to do that type of thing, or is it just going to be the two rings? just sounds awesome.
Oh, no, it's got to be the big cage. Got to be the big cage.
Yeah, it has to be, right? Yeah.
All right. Willie, what is our philosophical question for the week?
So I got kind of a small one because I knew we had a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
So and I was intrigued by our conversation last time about IRL kayfabe.
Yeah.
And so part of that is, you know, and also there's been all of this talk recently about entrances, you know, because Dolph Ziggler is making basically his theme is I don't have an entrance now. Right.
Yeah.
Like, he literally like turned his music off to come out for his match against Bobby Roode. And that was the theme. So I kind of want to talk about IRL entrances. Like people make these, you know, wrestlers like this is a big deal in wrestling. But are you a person who tries to enter a situation in a certain way? Is it something that you like find yourself thinking about, considering? Like, let's say you're on your way somewhere. Do you think about, you know, what you're going to do on the way in?
Oh, man. Usually, yes, but it's mostly because I'm late chronically.
Okay,
so I'm
sure.
I'm trying to figure out a way that I can deflect the tension that I've obviously created
away
by
from
being
the lateness.
Late.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's right there. Like that's an entrance that has a use, right? It's useful.
I will say one of the best actual like wrestling entrances that happen in real life, the president on the way to give the State of the Union.
Oh, yes.
Where like everybody's just milling about, and then the dude runs in and he's like, Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States of America. And then he makes the walk in and he's shaking hands. That's probably the best wrestling entrance in real life.
So I used to have a friend who every time he would come to or leave a party.
Yeah.
He made it like just the biggest effort I've ever seen anybody ever do. He would walk around every single person, shake their hand and ask their name. And say, like, hi, nice to meet you. It was crazy.
Oh, my God.
And then he would leave, and he would do it again. He'd be like, it was really nice to meet you. And if he didn't remember the name, he'd ask it again. So, you know, he'd just be like, I'm sorry. I met a lot of people. What was your – and he remembered a lot of people's names. He, like, made it – like, I don't know if you're like me. Sometimes people will say their name to me, and I literally didn't even pay attention to it.
No, like, I'm not even pressing record.
I immediately just tuned out as soon as they started to say
it.
He made this like crazy effort, and I was thinking about it the other day, and I remember a bunch of times he would leave, and people, it would make an impression on people. People would be like, oh man, who was that guy? That guy was awesome. And people would remember him, and so I assume later on in life when he would run into acquaintances, it was a totally different story than what happens to me, where I'm like, hey, you're the guy from the thing, and
you
okay,
do the
sure.
Thing.
Yeah. Like he would probably remember them and they would definitely remember him because he made that impression. I don't do it, and I've never even thought about it as being like something I should focus on.
Oh
right?
Man. Yeah.
But making an entrance is absolutely a way to make you memorable.
Dolph Ziggler should do that.
He should just come down and just shake everybody's
hand. Shake everybody's
hand,
and then on the way out, shake their hand again and remember their name.
Yeah,
and
see, he's making more. It's less about the entrance and more about the person.
More
right?
about networking. Smart.
It's just it's interesting. I don't think a lot of people actually pay attention to this, but in wrestling, it's such a big deal. The entrance, right? And so I don't know. There's a little part of me that kind of wishes that maybe it was something I did focus on at certain points in my life, and maybe I could make a big entrance. You know?
You want to know? I'm lying. I definitely do finger guns.
All right.
If I'm coming into a place and people are like, hey, I definitely like.
Now, how about the exit? Because I'm closer to a heel who just chicken shit won a title when I leave a place.
Oh, are you an Irish goodbyer?
I'm a guy who just disappears.
Yeah.
Everyone just goes, where did Dills go? And I used to always have an argument with my ex because she was like, I'd be like, all right, let's get out of here. And she'd be like, we got to say goodbye to everybody. And I'd be like, oh, man, we're going to be here for like another 25 minutes walking around saying goodbye to everybody, making fake plans that we're not going to do. So, I definitely adopt the grab the title and run. I roll out of the ring and a beeline and then maybe take one more look at the carnage before I like head back behind the curtain.
Yeah, you know, I always admired the Irish goodbye folks because it does save a ton of time and very often.
There's a certain amount of guilt that you have to be able to deal with, though, I think.
Very often there's just not a lot that is even done by the goodbye at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's my argument. It's like you say goodbye to people, and then ultimately somebody will say, like, hey, we should do this thing on that day. And then you're kind of roped into maybe saying yes at a moment in time when you don't have, you know, your date book out and you can't really confirm if that's a realistic thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it does depend. If I'm just at like a small gathering with a lot of close friends, I always give some hugs out and say my goodbyes. But if it's like a big party and lots of people are there and a few people I really care about, I'm not like, I need to make a circle and say goodbye to all these people. It's just interesting. I find the entrance and exit points in life. So many people do it so differently, and no different from wrestlers, you know?
Exactly. I'll tell you what, yet another intersection of wrestling and real life. That is why the philosophical question, even in its truncated form, is undeniable. Another element of this show that is undeniable is our shitty Melodica challenge. Willie, let's go ahead and play last week. We're back up to date. We're back doing shows on a regular clip again, so I'm not going to get screwed up. But let's go ahead and play last week's.
So I was nowhere near this until you made, I think, gave a bit of a clue.
Okay.
Pay attention to the timing. And then I think you even used the term Native American in there. And so I didn't actually go look, but Tatanka would be the closest guess I have.
We've actually already done Tatanka.
Ah, okay.
And
you're right. We have done Tatanka already, haven't we?
We have done Tatanka. This.
I admit I didn't do any research. I didn't go back and listen to it.
We normally don't play the real themes, but I need you to listen.
All right.
To the real theme here.
Okay.
Wolfpack is back, cause I'm mass destruction. Don't turn your back on the Wolfpack
now. Yeah.
Let's see one more time. Let's get the again. This is the shitty Melodica challenge. All right. I still think he should have had some sort of wolf at the very beginning.
Yes, some shitty wolf sound. Yeah.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. I still do love the NWO Wolfpack theme. Don't turn your back on the Wolfpack, Dills. You might end up in a body bag.
It's true. Was it actually, what's his name, rapping, by the way? Was it Conan?
Oh, I don't know. Who rapped?
I remember there was a lot of that. There was a lot of wrestlers doing their own vocals at the time.
And I guess Conan was an original.
To me, he was like the, not on the NWO Wolfpack track. Okay. All right. He was to me like the guy that was like that. He was more the Wolfpack than a lot of people to me, honestly.
No. That was the Filthy Animals, apparently, that he rapped.
Okay. That makes sense.
All right.
Because the Wolfpack rap is actually pretty, it's pretty like on beat. Oftentimes you can tell when it's the wrestler because it's a little, you know,
just
you're
a
like,
little
it's off-beat. Not a pro rapper. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Although shout out to Rocky Romero, he did another Roppongi 3K track.
Oh God, it's really good but really bad.
Yeah,
really good. Like I don't know. It's yeah. He's not. He's a wrestling rapper. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
It's like remember the NBA's best kept
rest. Yeah.
The NBA's best kept secret.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not. He's not a rapper who wrestles. He is a wrestler who rapped. There you go.
Man, we should
Although
do.
Do you remember the text I sent you where I was like, okay, so the Tempura boys are out here right now.
Yeah.
Now apparently they're up Pingy 3K. And I'm like, I like this a lot better. This is a lot better than the Tempura boys.
Yeah, the Tempura boys.
I could not really get behind that one.
All right, here we go. This is this week's Shitty Melodica Challenge.
Nice.
I love this so much. I love that we have that we give so much time and build, and then we just have this happen right afterward.
It's awesome. It's great.
Oh, it sounds like an old sea shanty. All right, everybody, if you want to know for sure what is the Melodica Challenge each and every week, you will get not only the answer but also the downloadable MP3 if you are a patron at patreon.com/1900wrestling. Willie, what do you got going on this week?
Mostly just streaming, so just come on by, check out twitch.tv/WillieDills, and if you are interested in the Twitters, it's @WillieDills.
Tell you what, folks.
That's pretty much it. Just lots of Hearthstone.
You can go ahead and follow me Justin R. Young everywhere you might find. If you want a list of everything that I do on Twitter, that is all the podcasts, all the live streams, updated as they are, then go ahead to Jury Mega Feed, JURY Mega Feed, FEED on Twitter. And if you want to watch us live, go ahead and check us out 3 p.m. Pacific time. That is 6 p.m. East Coast at twitch.tv/JustinRYoung. And then if you watch us live here, you can flip right on over to twitch.tv/WillieDills because I hang out with Mr. Dills while he gets his Hearthstone stream up and running for the day. So go ahead. It's about as fun as you can have on a Monday before Raw. I think that's pretty much it. Anything else, Willie?
No, that's it. Just come on and we're going to, you know, I'm curious to know what you think of a deck that I was playing recently that worked pretty well using a card called Pilfered Power. So come on over and join us there in a second. It's going to be pretty fun.
Nice. That about wraps it up for us.
I want you to call me.
Folks, remember, go ahead and check us out everywhere and tell your friends that you're listening to the best wrestling podcast on the internet. Go ahead and check us out. Until next week, be daily.
Idiots.
They call me Hara.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
And his name is John Cena.
Well, look at this prima donna.
Thank God Donald Trump's all heavy yet.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.